Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And I'd like to ask you, how precognitive are you? Are you a precog? That's premonition. Well, that's asking a lot. Maybe if we could all be better at that, life would be a lot easier. Maybe, maybe not. But we're going to learn all about precognition from someone who has studied it at length and has written at length about it and has a book out now called The Premonition Code, The Science of Precognition, How Sensing the Future Can Change Your Life. That sounds wonderful. So, Julia Mossbridge, thank you so much for being a guest on Energy Stew.
Thank you, Peter.
Now, how precognitive are you?
I'm a decent precog. I've gotten better over time as I put more attention on it, and I have a precognitive practice that I do that's actually a conscious practice rather than just letting spontaneous. You know, the most common precognitive experience that people can relate to is dreaming. But the second most common is a waking compulsion to do something that's kind of out of the blue, but it still speaks to you. And then you do it, and after you do it, you find out, oh, if I hadn't done that, I would have been in an accident. Or, oh, I did that because I needed to meet that person. That's sort of the second most common spontaneous precognitive experience. And the third most common spontaneous precognitive experience, this is all very loose because there are a bunch of, when I say second, first, second, and third, it's based on my reading. It's very loose because we still don't have really good data about this. And the third most common is being able to just have a flash of insight that, like, for instance, I was going to meet a friend. I'm on a book tour right now. I was going to meet a friend for dinner the other night. And even while we were planning it, I said, he's going to cancel. And I didn't say it to him. But I just had this feeling, he's going to cancel. And it was a very calm feeling, just knowing he's going to cancel. And so I put it on my calendar in case I was wrong. And he did cancel. And it was easy to deal with my life. Like you said, it does make things easier if you hold it in a certain light of, I'm not always correct, but I sure get useful information a lot of the time.
Right. Right. I find that there's some premonitions that I think I might have that aren't correct because I worry too much about whether they'll be correct or not. And it clouds it. And it's like, but then there are premonitions that just feel like it's an automatic. And those are easier to believe. And then there are premonitions that you just want them to go away. One time I was packing my car up north in Vermont and had my kids out. They were young at the time. And I could just see and feel and smell blood in the car. And I said, I better drive careful. This is a premonition. I know that there's trouble. And so I drove really carefully, but I didn't, there was something I didn't do outside of the car. We were on a mountain and it was these alpine sleds and I got into one and I wasn't thinking about that premonition about blood and had a big accident, ended up in the hospital, very bloody, and it was right. And then another time I was about to go for a run in Central Park. And I was just about to step on the park drive and I heard a strong voice in my head and said, stop, don't do that. And it's like, excuse me, I'm going for a run. And I was about to step again and I heard again, stop, don't do that. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't, this is before I really got to respect these precognitions. And so I said, thank you for sharing, whoever that voice is, but I'm going to go for my run. And 4 miles later, I had a stress fracture in my foot.
I know those feelings. I've lived through those feelings and those, like, oh, I'm not going to listen to you, that kind of arrogance. And then learning to regret it.
Yeah, so now I'll argue with these voices about things. And yet give in. And I've had amazing.
You know enough to give in.
Right. Could you hold the mic just under your mouth a little bit more, just so that.
Sure. Is this better?
Yeah, that's better. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also a technician in this job.
Yeah, you have to do it all.
Right. So it's exciting to talk about this, but you really are a scientist who has built a system of precognition that you call controlled precognition. And it's followed six basic steps that use, learn. And what your goal is to get enough people doing this so you can create consensus about precognition, right?
Well, I have multiple goals. And I'm in my car. I'm going to turn on the air conditioner for a second. Let me know if it bothers the sound.
Okay.
I have multiple goals with this. And so one goal is to continue my research. I've been doing research online for years around precognition. And so to continue my research, how's the sound?
Very good.
So one goal is to continue my research and get more and more data about precognition, how it works for people. I'm particularly curious about oscillating patterns and abilities. So I noticed in myself, I can sit down and do controlled precognition at my desk with a piece of paper, and I go through the six steps, and a random number generator decides what my target will be, which will be a photo. And I'll have tried to describe the photo beforehand. And I will go through two or three times when I get beautiful hits in a row. When I say hit, I mean accurate precognitions in a row. And then I will cycle to two or three times when I fail. And, you know, if it were completely random, I should have failure, success, 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 failure, success, failure, failure, success. But instead, I see this beautiful oscillation, which is highly statistically unlikely. As well as, of course, performance of chance. So the question I ask myself is, what's going on with these oscillations? And I want to find out if other people are having them too. And I think they are, based on some conversations with other researchers. I want to find out if time of day is a factor. I want to find out if gender is a factor, and I think it is, based on some of my work. So there's a lot, you know, the rigorous research about precognition. And when I say precognition, I mean specifically precognition. So intuition is this general umbrella term for any kind of intuitive experience. Precognition is a scientific term for getting accurate information about future events that are not predictable by your own direct action or by inference. So the two examples I like to give are, look, if you really like, you know, melted cheese sandwiches and you make yourself a melted cheese sandwich for lunch the day after you dreamed about a melted cheese sandwich, that doesn't count as precognition.
Right.
Because you caused it.
Right.
Okay. And then another one is, if you even subconsciously hear the rumble of thunder and it's a really sunny day, but you subconsciously heard that and you take your umbrella outside, and you're so grateful because it begins to rain, that's not precognition either. That's subconscious intuition, but not precognition. So the way to measure precognition, to really measure it, I'm not saying it doesn't exist outside the lab. The whole reason I do this work is because I have regular precognitive experiences outside the lab. But the way to measure it is in the lab or on an online platform like I've created, where you have a random number generator that doesn't choose the target, and no one on the planet knows what the target is until after you've already made your decision.
Right. And so there are different understandings and principles about precognition and how to relate to it. I have a lot of people who ask me to predict the future for them in ways that then they can make choices. And I don't want to be responsible for those choices.
Well, that's right. I'm distracted a little by someone outside my door, so let me say goodbye to him for a second.
Sure.
Hey, Daniel, thank you so much. I hope you feel better.
Good. A little reality, outside reality. So,
can you ask that question again?
Well, it's just that when people want me to predict the future for them so that they can make a particular choice about it,
yeah,
I won't do that.
Yeah, so I don't do that because it doesn't make any sense. So it's coming from a place. It's not only that I don't do that. People tend not to ask me for that, probably because I don't advertise that I do that. I want them to. Here's my position on that. If they're supposed to be using precognition in their own life to help guide it, then they will be developing their own precognitive ability to do that. That's one position. And the other position is their opinion about what is best for them in terms of their choice is just their opinion, but almost has nothing to do with what's actually best for them.
But it should be theirs.
It's their opinion, yeah.
Right.
And it should be theirs.
But they're asking me, I can give people data that they can make choices from.
Yeah.
But I always tell people, I'm not making a choice for you. I'm not going to, tell you this is what you should do.
Yep. I think that's karmically sound, if you believe
it. Right, exactly.
And part of what we talk about in the book are the principles and ethics about what it means to be what we call a positive precog, which is someone who's actually acknowledging and working towards their precognitive ability and using it to help make the world a better place. And so you need ethics because clearly this can be used. I have been asked to do corporate, basically like corporate espionage or things that are not good for people. Or like even at the face of it, even if you could tell yourself a story about why it's good for people, but on the face of it, it doesn't feel right. So I don't do that stuff. And I think that it's important to have some kind of ethical principles from which you operate.
Right. And so you have a list of different ethics and principles in the book. And I'm really happy to see that. So there's so much. I'm not a precog in the way that you are, because what I like about what you do is that there's a method to it that you use that has six steps to it, and that you follow those steps. And I think there are a lot of people who would prefer to do that than create the alpha state that I suggest and just allow whatever needs to come through to come through.
Well, one of those steps is, it's probably the same six steps, I hate to tell you. Well, I don't know why you assume that one of those steps isn't allowing things that need to come through.
Well, one of the big things that I teach is that intuition works best when you have a question.
Yeah.
Because the universe responds to that question.
Yeah.
And I think all of life responds best to it's hard to get an answer if you don't have a question.
That's right. And so in this process, the controlled precognition process, it's all about training your precognition. It's not about what you would use your precognition for once you feel good about how well you're precognizing things. Right. So the question is always the same. It's what are the contents of the picture you're about to see? That's the question.
Right. And you have tools to sense it.
That's right. Tools to sense it. And it has meaning to the person who wants to train their precognition. The question matters because their whole goal is to try to describe that. So it's interesting. This whole world of precognition and intuition, it brings to mind the question of what is the meaningful thing for each person? And so if something has meaning for you, I think the universe does respond to that. But that could be different for different people. So right. Someone else who doesn't want to train their precognition and who says, I don't care what's in the picture, I don't think they're going to do too well.
I think the biggest issue with any of this is to know the difference between being an open-minded person and being run by preconceptions.
Well, and also being run by superstitions.
And that's part of a preconception, because superstition.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
So you have opinions that of the way things should be, and that can really influence your availability, your open-mindedness, so that you can't get clear precognition when you wanted to agree with your opinion.
Yes, I have to. May I speak to that for a little bit?
Sure.
So one of my things that I've noticed in my controlled precognition practice, so first of all, one of the reasons I developed it is for people who email me and say they have constant precognition and it bothers them and it's totally spontaneous, they wish they could get it under control. And so this is partly a method to do that. If you have a time every day where you sit down and you're doing precognition, you're less likely to be sort of dominated by your spontaneous precognitions if they bother you. This is my theory, we'll see. But the other thing is, I noticed in my own controlled precognitive practice is that when I sit down to do this and I put myself in the state that I need to be in, I have to give my conscious mind, my ego, a job, and or otherwise it
it'll bother you.
It'll bother me. And what I notice is it has the most adorable job. It's kind of like a funny job. So its job is when my higher self comes in, I call it my higher self or my superconscious, comes in with some information that's really right on target, my conscious mind says, well, why? That doesn't make any sense. And so I write down, I don't know why that is. That doesn't make any sense, you know, because I'm giving my conscious mind free rein to have its own opinion. And that really works well because, okay, fine, I paid attention to you. But also, the funny thing is, paradoxically, it's its way of saying, this is really important.
Yeah, but you're not telling your ego that.
No, it gets to have its own little opinion, and I write it down, and then I go, oh, thanks for highlighting that.
Yeah. That's wonderful. So I want to talk to you about a concept in your book that really attracted me, and that's what you call causal loops, and it's how perhaps the future is pulling us forward towards it rather than us creating it.
Yes. Yes, I think a lot. So, sorry, did you?
That's just such an unusual. I understand it very well. It's hard to figure it out in our lives where it takes place. It's like what you say in the book, you know, if you have a teacup that drops and shatters, that's the future, is that it shattered. So when you are holding a teacup and it already knows the future, does it have to then fall out of your hands and shatter because it's being pulled towards already being shattered in the future?
So let's talk about time worldviews. There are a couple, in terms of physics, there's a couple sort of antagonized worldviews. So one is the block universe of space-time, where the view is that everything that did, is, or will happen is locked in place. And we're just traveling through that sort of block of information, and events happen as we travel, as we approach them to us. But in fact, it's all locked in place. So that is you could defend that in the in the sciences. You could defend that worldview quite easily. And then another worldview also coming from the sciences is the probabilistic worldview, that the future is undetermined, but the probabilities of the future can be calculated, future events. So you could argue with precognition that you're precognizing an event that's set in stone if you're a block universe fan, which I am, but I'm agnostic because I also am a fan of quantum mechanics, which says that all you get is probabilities in the future. So you could also argue that you're precognizing a probability. So now let's talk about pulling from the future. So in terms of pulling from the future, that comes from this idea of cause. So we have causality. We often think of causality as thing A affects thing B. And why do we know that? Because if thing A doesn't happen, thing B doesn't happen. And we also think we know that because thing A comes before thing B. So that's how we define causality.
Right.
So now if there's retrocausality, which a bunch of people in physics study, it's kind of a weird word because we're changing the definition of causality. We're saying causality can be in either direction in time. And what matters is this dependence. That's the only thing that defines causality is dependence. And it could be sort of what we call forward or what we call backwards. So when we talk about pulling from the future, it validates the idea of causality. Now, I'm not sure I believe that causality is scientifically defensible or mystically or spiritually defensible. I'm not sure at all, and I sort of feel it might not exist. But I think the experience of something being pulled from a future feels different, sort of on a spiritual or mystical level or psychological level, than something pushed from the present. And the reason is because when it's pushed from the present, we can think that our present person, our present personality, has something to do with it.
Right, we have to believe in it. So, but you and I talked briefly before the show about astrological rectification, when people's lives can be look back historically and look at all the important dates in their lives, and then understand on an astrological chart that those dates and events could only have happened if you were born in a particular second of time. So therefore, that second of time already predicted these the timing of all these future events in your life. So they had to happen then.
Maybe. So
they were drawing us to them, perhaps.
Maybe, but so scientifically, if I look at those results, I ask, as an open-minded scientist, I ask, okay, so to do that experiment, you have to have birth data that has the actual second of birth.
You don't know it.
Yeah, exactly.
They get you to it because of all those events.
Right, and what I'm saying is, as a scientist, I say, how do you know you're getting to it correctly when you don't have corroborating data? So what I'm saying is, I love all these interesting different ways of thinking about things, including astrology. But as a scientist, I say, let's be careful, because your assumption that you've actually correctly identified the second hasn't been corroborated by any other data.
Well, it is corroborated, for instance, by then you can look at an astrological chart of the person's personality, and it corresponds the best with that moment in time rather than
as long as an experiment has been done where an independent observer that is given like six different charts and has to choose which one corresponds best, then I would agree with you. Yeah. I'm saying that when we start drawing conclusions, here's what I'm really saying. I'm not trying to throw cold water on this idea because I think it's interesting. What I'm really saying is, we're in a time in history where we are, physicists, psychologists, neuroscientists, philosophers, all agree that all of a sudden we don't really know what time is. There's just a huge confusion about what time is.
Right.
So we're in a place of history where we are ready for a revolution around time. And making premature conclusions about how it works this way or another way based on a small amount of data is the problem. We have to let ourselves live in ambiguity.
Well, I think we need larger brain capacity.
No, I think we could train ourselves, regardless of brain capacity, I think we train ourselves to live in ambiguity, because it's from the being willing to not know and being willing to not foreclose too quickly on a solution to a problem, that's where the solution to the problem emerges.
Right. And
so I'm just warning against that.
Right. Since I work intuitively, I've found over many years working with thousands of people that the information flows through so clearly and accurately about their lives in ways that I have no idea who I'm talking to about what. I just have information that they totally understand, and it correlates exactly with their
exactly
lives.
And so, speaking as a scientist, I would say what I just said. Speaking as an intuitive who's a skilled precog, clearly there's something going on. Like,
right.
That's just clear. And also, by the way, scientifically, at least for precognition, there's clearly something going on. And I too want to understand it. I just don't want to foreclose too quickly on an explanation.
Well, and what you say in your book is the best way to understand it is to have direct experiences of it yourself.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
So to have a direct experience of you, let's just talk quickly. We're getting near the end of the show. Now, you're going to be in New York on October 30th, working leading a workshop with Mitchell Rabin.
Yeah.
A better world. So how can people find out more about you and more about that?
Oh, sure. Yeah, that's going to be really fun. So there's more information about that on the, and also about me, but I think that's probably more interesting.
To meet you in person, yes.
Yeah. Well, no, but I mean, what's really more interesting is the information and the experience. But the website is thepremonitioncode.com. And if you click on the events page, it has all the events where I'll be speaking and listed, including that one. And you can click through to register on Eventbrite for that one. And then But that website also contains, I want to point people to the what's called the Precog, Positive Precog Training Area, where you can actually go through and do the 6 steps, and it's all free, and you can be part of the experiment if you're inside the U.S. And if you're outside the U.S., we can hope you can be part of the experiment too. But in, regardless, you can all click through, try to predict these pictures, get in touch with your intuition, and have the kind of experiences that Peter and I are talking about, where you know for yourself, you know, oh God, I had a flash in my mind of a chipmunk, and there's the picture of a chipmunk, and what is the deal with that? Because the picture can be of anything.
Right. Yeah. Right. And then you find out later that there was a reason for that.
Yeah.
And so there's so much more to ask you and talk about. Hopefully we'll get to meet up again and do some more, because
I would love that. I love talking with you about these things. You ask big questions.
Thank you. Glad to know that. So, and your book is The Premonition Code, and you're Dr. Julia Mossbridge.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy to talk with you on Energy Stew. Thank you.
Thank you.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at Peter at HeartRiver, HeartRiver.org. I'd love to hear from you. And thanks so much for listening.